Give us the weird stuff. We want to hear, you know, we want to hear Elvis like burping in a show, like when they released the 69. We want to hear Elvis like cussing in the studio. We want to see Elvis the human being as he's creating his craft.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of the Elvis Right Now podcast. So today, Maggie is out of the studio. We're not able to have her with us, so it's just me today. My name is Mary, if you're new, and today I am joined by a very special guest. Ator Crespo is going to be on the show today talking to us about his awesome Elvis life. I'm just going to introduce him right now. Ator, how are you?
Hello, hello, hello. I'm great. Thanks for inviting me. And I'm looking forward to talk a little bit about Elvis.
So jumping right into it, Ator, why don't you just tell us who you are, what you do, Elvis related, all that jazz.
Well, I'm probably like the luckiest like person alive. I'm a musician. And I work with a bunch of Elvis tribute artists, mainly with Cody Slaughter, Sean Clutch, Ding Z, you know, the Ultimates. And with that, I have had the opportunity of sharing the stage with many musicians that performed with Elvis, you know, from many eras, you know, since DJ Fontana until, you know, the Sweet Inspirations, Stamps Quartet, all those guys. So, yeah, that's what I do.
So, Ator, you said that you work with some ETAs. Just for those who don't know, can you tell us what that is and how they're different from impersonators?
So, ETAs are Elvis tribute artists. It's really like a thin line. It's the term changed from time to time. It's kind of weird how, like, in the Elvis world, that has happened way more times than any other tribute world, like the Beatles or anywhere else. Basically, like, the way they separate now is that Elvis tribute artists, I guess, are a little bit, like, more filtered on, like, quality. Because they were, you know, Elvis impersonators back in the day, and then somebody else showed up with this fancy word, you know, tribute artists, and then they all migrated and now they're considered tribute artists. And for some time there was an attempt to make them be called like actors. So, and it was not long ago. Yeah, it was like when EPE did that thing at the Westgate, and they had like the show with Martin Fontaine from Canada.
Okay.
And there was an attempt of to make him different than an ETA, even though he is an ETA. With the job that he does, to call him like an actor and try to do the show in a different light. But in the end of the day, it's kind of the same thing. What's separating the business, it's like that impersonators turn to be like a negative term, per se. Like, so that's honestly, I guess that's the only like difference for us. You know, we kind of don't get hold into those labels, because in the end of the day, they're all just, you know, putting the jumpsuit and going on stage and singing Elvis songs. But the way that it's defined right now is just that ETAs are more of like the illusion experience. And what I can see, it's like impersonators will act like Elvis on stage, do the same jokes. They will say, you know, I'm Elvis Presley on stage. And ETAs, by that name changing, kind of filter a little bit that it's like, I'm not Elvis. I'm a fan. I'm wearing this jumpsuit. My hair is like that. But I'm trying to create an illusion with you that we are in an Elvis show. And I'm kind of representing Elvis at that moment, you know. But it's not like a feel of like, oh, I'm Elvis Presley right now on stage. So that's right. Like the difference that I can think of. Like, it's very confusing. It's really weird. And like I said, like, only in the Elvis world, I can feel that, you know, where in the Beatles world, they just call themselves like impersonators or a tribute band or whatever. And there's never been some difference on term or change or anything. So we live in a peculiar artistic bubble for sure.
Cool. Yeah. In my mind, whenever, I mean, people ask me, I remember when I was in high school, people used to be like, well, what's the difference between, you know, the two? And I always thought like an impersonator, whenever you see like an Elvis impersonator, they oftentimes, like you said, either think they are Elvis or pretty close to Elvis. Even like off stage when they're like, you know, not performing, they still have that like persona about them. And then tribute artists to me, whenever I've seen them, which I love going to see them, it's like my favorite thing to do. Closest thing I'll ever get to an Elvis concert, but they are very respectful, and the ones that I have seen always make sure to like share their story of why they're doing it. They're usually doing it because they love Elvis. They want to keep his legacy alive, and they're paying tribute to his memory, I guess. And I have a lot of respect for that. I think that's really cool.
Oh yeah. Like it is kind of like that. Like the business is so broad, and you know, it's weird. You have some, you know, weird people, you know, those guys that are like performing like, you know, in bowling alleys, and they're acting, you know, like they're Elvis, and their work, it's not even close to Elvis, but right. They kind of get caught up in that. It's like, it's one side of Elvis's magic that, you know, you want to be Elvis so bad because he's the coolest dude on earth, you know?
Absolutely.
And they kind of get lost in that. And then I think it was more of a business thing of like, how can we defer our work, how we can separate, so whenever I say that I do a tribute to Elvis, people don't automatically think that I'm the dude singing at the pizza joint or the bowling alley and doing some weird thing and some weird, you know, scratchy suit that has nothing right. to do with Elvis. So because it does sound more fancy when you're like, whoa, where do you work? And if I say like, oh, I play with Elvis impersonators, it's like, oh my god, that's where they think. And then when you say, oh, I work with Elvis tribute artists, it's like, oh, fancy, you know?
Right.
So it's true. Like it is that division. I think it ended up being very like classified on levels of work, I guess. Like a tribute artist, I would expect when I'm going to see a tribute artist, okay, he's going to have the right clothing. He's going to be paying attention to details, and it's supposed to be a better, you know, quality and a more fan friendly and Elvis friendly, because, you know, nobody's going to replace him. Nobody wants to do that, but you do meet some people when you are doing like the festival circuit. There are some guys out there that kind of get a little lost on that thing. So, yeah, I think it's more of like it's an easier way, I guess, to separate.
So I have a question for you about the tribute world, your kind of life, what you do for a living. Can you just tell us a little bit? Because I know that you travel around, you do shows. What is that like? What do you love about that?
So it's pretty insane. Elvis has been gone for so long, and you can still sell out like a large theater. You can still have a huge production, like costly production on the road. And it's actually safer. We've heard from venues that have big names, you know, coming and performing, that they are more safe having an Elvis tribute act than like a nowadays band playing sometimes, because it's more guaranteed that they can sell tickets.
Wow.
So it's super weird, right? It's like Elvis's music is stronger than ever right now. We have a new wave, like a new generation coming strong. And we just got to make sure that we keep pushing it, you know, to make it happen. And the best right. way to do that is through, you know, Elvis's music. That was his way of connecting with people. And so it's pretty weird. It's like, it's surreal. Like I said in the beginning, like for somebody that since, you know, I was a little kid, I would put, you know, the on tour VHS and keep watching that. And nowadays it's like I'm playing a show that it's recreating those shows and with those people in it. And we are traveling the world. Like we go to Europe, you know, we travel all over the US, Canada, Australia. It's like, what the heck's going on? Like, how is that so powerful? And it never changed. We can go back to the same city like 5 years in a row. We're still like selling out the building. There's still the people coming. It's always new people. You rarely see like you have the small group of people that go to every show, and which they end up becoming our friends. You know, they kind of keep following the tour and helping us out. And But the majority of people, they're brand new. It's like people just having contact with Elvis's music like he's alive, you know. It's like still right there, you know.
That's but, so amazing.
It's so
that.
Cool. And it's so like interesting. And I've seen like in the last 5-4 years how the number of kids in the audience, it's like it has raised so much. Like everywhere we go, there's little kids with little jumpsuits all over the building. And yes. They're dancing and little tiny kids knowing every word. And I'm not saying like, you know, Love Me Tender, Osha Cup. I'm saying like we're playing It's Impossible. And there's like,
yeah.
You know, 5-year-old kid singing the song, you know, and you're like, how the heck do you know this song? How did you hear
right.
it? Like, so it's so weird how this kids, I mean, I guess with the internet, you have more access to things. And, you know, kids nowadays just stay in the iPad and the iPhones and just. But it's
right.
great. Hey, if you're looking up Elvis on YouTube all day, you know, keep doing that. It's so cool, like, to just watch. And I don't know, it's like an honor that, like, we feel a little bit that we're doing our part. It's like, okay, this kid's listening to this song, you know, live, played in the Elvis's version, and there was no other way that this kid would have access to this because, you know, Elvis is not here. So
right.
It is kind of cool to have a certain role in this kid's life. Like, okay, this is what Elvis's show kind of felt like. It's like, you know, if we can do like 0.001% of what it was like being an Elvis show, like our job's done for sure.
That's so cool. And I know, like, I think our first episode here on this podcast, we talked about how Elvis is so relevant, even, what, 43 years after he died? It just keeps going on and on, and new generations of people keep, you know, getting invested in his music and his story. And so I wanted to ask you, this is kind of like an opinion, I guess, but do you think that Elvis is, in a sense, more famous now than he was when he was living?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Because of technology, his reach just kept going. And the cool thing is, like, he didn't need no boosting, you know, in this post. You know, he didn't need a marketing company pushing him. He just did by himself. You know, I'm 100% sure, like, if you go to when first, you know, social media started, you were always going to have that person, you know, Facebook started. Okay, probably, like, in the first week, somebody had Elvis as a profile picture on Facebook.
Right.
Somebody had like Presley as last name, as
right.
long as Facebook would allow you to, you know, same thing with Instagram. You just see all those fan accounts, you know, popping up and spreading his image. And it's always new people in contact with, you know, you guys are doing that. You know, when we see your account growing and the comments, the people that are interacting with you guys, it's always new people. It's always new people reaching, you know. And, you know, you guys are not boosting posts. You guys are not working, you know, for marketing and EPE. It's not something that it's, like, forced. It's
right.
literally, like, a fan showing Elvis' side that a lot of people wouldn't have access to it, and now everybody has access to it. You know, the information's out there.
Right.
So I do think that right now, yes, he's definitely more famous than he was in the 70s. Like, you know, I think his geographic position didn't help him much in all the situation with no international tours and
sure.
all that jazz, just, you know, didn't help him, even though it's insane that even with all those problems, what he reached in the 70s and how he became already the biggest star. But
right.
I mean, it's when, like, the orchestra CD, you know, in the UK, I think at the time, Justin Bieber's song, that one, something about saying sorry or whatever. Because, you know, I'm stuck in time. I just listen to old stuff, so I don't even know what the heck the song was. But,
so do I.
Yeah, so that song was, like, number one. And Elvis's orchestra CD with the Royal
right.
actually took first place and took that song out.
There you go.
Nowadays, you know, now. And it's when you think about it, it's like an orchestra arrangement. Who the heck in our age is, like, listening to an orchestra arrangement or even, you know, being close
right.
to classical music? But it just got first place in the UK. And our shows there exploded with young people. When that CD was released, like 2015, 16, when the second one came out, that's when we did the transition from large theaters to literally arenas. We're playing like arenas in the UK, and the places are packed. So it's so strong, so strong. Elvis is the strongest star in the world still to today.
Oh, that makes me so happy to hear, because I know when I made my Instagram account, if you don't follow us, I can go ahead and plug us right now. My Instagram is @myboy_myboy in Aitor. What is yours?
Mine is Aitor, Heitor_TCB.
There you go. And he has awesome content over there, so you guys should definitely follow him. But what I was going to say is when I made mine, I was so expecting to, like, number one, not gain that many, you know, followers. I thought that the people who were into Elvis today, you know, after going to Graceland and stuff, seeing mostly the older generation that I really paid attention to, I thought that, you know, those people don't really know how to use Instagram, or they're not really online that much. But when I made it, literally most of the people that I interact with right now are my age, and I'm 20 years old. So it gives me such hope, and like, it makes me feel so good that like there is a future for Elvis and that his name will not get lost. And that makes me really happy, because I know that you and me and a lot of other people out here, that's our goal and our motivation, is just to keep his name and his legacy and the good parts of his life, the important parts, alive, because they're really important.
Oh yeah. And it's pretty cool how like, we are hard to please, you know, this new generation, because we got attached with Elvis. You know, I feel like the older generation, they got attached because they had everything, you know, there. They had Elvis was alive. New songs were coming. Right. Elvis's image was right there. So everybody's like, you know, falling in love. And you still have the image thing, because, I mean, holy cow, that dude just looks the coolest dude ever. You know, even for in the 50s in the photos, it's like, it's so like modern still and so like cool. Right. But our generation, we are more stuck into his music, into his craft, you know? So we are, I think we are pushing releases. I do think that the new, you know, from Elvis and Nashville release, it was a push from newer generations, where we need to hear more Elvis music, and we need to hear it, you know, best quality possible. And they gotta give us that, because they are competing with artists they're recording nowadays. So how do we make a recording sound like it was recorded last week? So right. You know, we keep bringing the young people, and Elvis's magic is intact. So that release for me was like a huge win in that sense. So we are forcing the state to, like, we're letting them know, like, hey, we're, you know, not tired per se, but, you know, quotation marks, tired of, you know, Madison Square Garden, Aloha, you know, stop re-releasing that over and over. But hey, we like the different stuff too. You know, right. The Elvis National Box said it's a success in sales. So I love that we are slowly heading towards that path, you know.
And the Elvis in Nashville box set literally has like pretty much all of my favorite Elvis songs on it. That has been like my favorite release to date. It's so good.
Oh, it's so cool. And the guy that mixed it, I mean, the guy just made it really sound like it's a brand new band that just released their album. You know, it sounds so new. And it just to show that Elvis was ahead of his time. And those songs will never get old. Like, they will never get old.
Yeah, I don't think, like, oh, I'm listening to old people's music when I listen to Elvis. I think that his songs rock, like, still. Even, you know, the slower songs, they just have so much, like, passion and, like, oh, you can tell. And even what I've been recently into is, like, watching those people react to his certain songs on YouTube, and like people who don't know who he is, have never heard, you know, a song other than like Hound Dog or Blue Suede Shoes, and they're completely blown away. They're like, oh, you can hear like the passion in his voice. You can tell that he believes in what he's saying, what he's singing, the message of the song. And that makes me so happy as well, because like, how cool that people still vibe with that music that, you know, usually would be thought of as, oh, that's an old person song.
And again, it's like, it's a full, you know, circle of marketing there, that Elvis is not pushing anything. You know, those accounts, there's people that they pay to have their videos in big reaction accounts. And no, they are doing Elvis because they know that the name Elvis will generate clicks.
Right.
So, you know, they push Elvis forward to their audience, and Elvis just keeps going and keeps generating clicks and keeps going, generating clicks and keeps going. I mean, it's like there's no end. There's just no end to Elvis's, you know, career. There's no end in sight. You know, he's going to be here as long as his music is playing. He's just going to be alive, you know.
I love that. And no matter how controversial his life was, no matter what people can pick apart, I feel like at the end of the day, listening to his music, you just can't deny that it is, it slaps. Like, you can't, it's just good music. Like, I don't care who he was. I mean, I care, obviously. I know you care. But people, you know, they can say, I don't care who he was as a, you know, person, it doesn't matter to me. All I'm interested in is his music, and I know that his music is good, and therefore I'm going to keep listening to him.
Yeah, anybody that says that our songs are not a jam, just go listen to Patch It Up.
Like, yes.
From the new release. Just listen to that, and like, I don't want like a single muscle of your body like moving. You
right.
know, I want to say that's like the challenge ever, because that's like a jam. And it's quite funny that like Elvis is seen as controversial, because, you know, like, nowadays, I think there's like way worse like artists there.
You oh, know, absolutely.
It's super weird. Like you said, you know, people try to pick. You know, they gotta find something that they can twist a little bit and somehow make it, you know, something huge out of it. But
right,
I guess, you know, it's like Cornell used to say. You know, it's free publicity. You know, everything, just they gotta talk about Elvis.
Yeah, and you know, it could be. Today, it's just like cancel culture is like such a huge thing. So people have to find something wrong. You know, if people like somebody, there has to be something wrong with them to find. So, but like you said, yeah, like talk is talk. His name is still out there. And as long as there's people like us that, you know, care to put the work in and really find out the truth, I think that, you know, there's hope.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. And I love your videos about that, by the way. You know, about Elvis, you know, Elvis and racism, Elvis and, you know, the big, oh, Priscilla was just 14, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's I really appreciate, like, your calmness and your focus on, like, explaining to people what actually happened and how things worked back then, because it's such a cluster of information, you know, and everybody just posted online something, and you know, the misinformation is real. I mean, these people, they haven't read like one single book.
Right.
You know, it's so I really appreciate those videos to like explain to people, okay, here's what really happened. You know, here's what was going on. So like, calm down, like take a deep breath.
Right.
And check what happened, you know.
Exactly. And like you said, usually it's just the fact that people, you know, they hear something and they go off of what they hear. They really don't really have an idea of what actually happened. They usually don't put the work in to actually find out. So, I mean, that's my goal, is to just like get that info out there, because most of the time people actually don't care about that. They just care about, you know, the gossip or the tea, if you will.
And it's also like, it's good to remember people. It's like, it's weird, like with other artists, I do feel that they are like perfect, you know. It's like when I think about Paul McCartney, yeah, he has a lot of stuff that happened in his life, but people don't make a big deal out of it. It's like he's above that. And right. I think that because Elvis connects with people in such a human level through his songs, that somehow that works against him, that every time he acted like a human and not really talking about, you know, the really, you know, fake theory of Elvis being a racist or, you know, the Priscilla thing, but just in general, like, you know, when he got mad and he would explode within his tight group, you know, the Memphis Mafia, they are the only ones seen, but because somebody wrote a book, people then say, oh, Elvis was easy, you know, he lost temper easily, you know, oh, Elvis must have been, you know, really mean to them. And it's like, no, like, it's one day off that he had, and he is a human. And I think that just gets super clear with the way that he puts himself in his songs when he's singing. And I do think that he's the most transparent performer of all time. You can tell when Elvis was pissed by hearing him singing. You know, you can tell when he was bugged about something by just listening to a concert bootleg. You know when something was not right for him. And right. You know when the day was awesome for him. You know, so there's no other performer in the world that it's that transparent about how they're feeling while they're singing, you know.
I agree 100%. That's a really good point. And I was just talking with someone else about that. Like, if you listen, you know, in the 70s, late 70s to those bootlegs, those concerts, you can tell when he was having a bad day. You can tell, you know, when his life was kind of falling apart as it was back then in those years. Or you can tell when, you know, when I don't know, that you can tell, like, his mood in his songs. And I think that goes back to he felt his songs that he sang and he meant every single word. And so if there was a passionate song, maybe one with like a sadder message or something like that, it always came across. And
it's like the highlight of the night.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Not only with that too, but like his interaction, it's like, and it makes you respect him even more, because there are days that we all wake up and we're like, we don't want to do anything today because we feel like crap. The day's already bad. We woke up, you know, in a weird mood, and it's like we avoid seeing people. But Elvis had no choice in that.
Right.
It was like, if it was a show day, I'm sorry, you're going to wake up. The time you're going to wake up, you're going to put on that jumpsuit, you're going to go on stage, you're going to sing in front of 20,000 people, and you got to seem happy. And he had the pressure that he put on himself of, this people pay the tickets to see me. Because he was super loyal to his fans.
Exactly.
So they need to see a good show. So he would force himself. And sometimes you can like literally hear that clash. And it's hard to listen to those bootlegs sometimes, because you can feel the clash of him not wanting to be there because he feels terrible that day. You know, right. He's depressed. He's having some, you know, he read some spiritual book that, you know, kind of opened a door for him, that he's, you know, having some insights about a life decision or something.
Right.
And at the same time, he's like, I got to please these people. I got to make them leave here happy. And you can hear that clash on every note he's singing when it's a bad night. I mean, it's pretty incredible how easily he can communicate through singing.
Right.
You know, he doesn't need even to tell people that he's bugged. The fans would feel that we're in the building. And the coolest thing is that most of the shows, the audiences are answering well, because, you know, they want to give to Elvis and make sure that Elvis feels welcome. You know, it's like this weird thing that it was like an exchange going on between Elvis and the audience constantly, you know. So
absolutely.
That's why I love bootlegs. I just adore listening to bootlegs, because you can know when something's wrong and when something's not, and just respect him as an artist way more.
Yeah, that human side just shows itself, and that doesn't happen. I mean, even today, like, it's hard to get that insight of like what they're feeling. Some people are very open about like mental health and struggles like that, and some people just aren't. Some people are, you know. And Elvis really, he really wasn't like, to his fans, he wanted to seem like he wanted to make them proud, and he wanted to, like you said, give them a good show, make them happy when they left, and give them a good experience. But you could tell, as we just said, in another way through him, and that was through his art and through how his performance came across that night.
Exactly. And that time too, you know, conservative 70s, you know, depression was something that did not exist.
Exactly.
You know, in their minds. And it's like, you got to deal with it. And it's not like somebody being scared of saying they were depressed. Like, in Elvis's mind, it was like, there's no such thing as depression. It's something else. It's something else. I don't know what's wrong, but it's something else. Oh, no, it's none of that depression thing. You know, just like weak people have it or something, you know, whatever the heck was the propaganda in the 70s about it.
Mm.
But so it's a constant conflict, like on Elvis's like later years. You know, it's interesting and it's sad. But at the same time, it's incredible as like a performer.
Right.
How he just kept on giving. You know, he literally like just went until his limit. He passed his limit. I mean, that guy was the best entertainer of all time, without a doubt.
100%. Yes, I agree. So, Ator, kind of switching gears here. We were talking about bootlegs for a while, and that made me think of concerts in general. And I wanted to know, do you have a favorite concert? And if you do, which one is it?
I do. My favorite show is the Boston 1971.
Okay.
I just love 1971. Not really the Vegas period, because he was like really rushing things. I mean, he was playing for like 45, 50 minutes, no stop within songs. The shows are very rushed. But that November 71 tour, I don't know. I kind of have the image that he was already getting bored with Vegas in 71. And he just wanted to get over with the show, just do whatever, and, you know, just get done with it. Now, when he was on tour, I feel that that was more of a challenge for him. And still new, because he just started touring like the year before. So it's more of like, will I please the audience tonight? You know, and I feel that he was not still like safe, like spot. Like after the Aloha, I think that he reached a safe spot that he was like, I know that people are paying money to see me and I have a pretty consistent show. So it's like safe zone. I think 71, he's still exploring a lot. So he's throwing some weird songs. He's doing some, you know, crazy moves on stage. The mood is just incredible. His jokes between the songs, he was just having an incredible time. You know, he is where he was supposed to be, like on stage. So for me, that November 71 tour, it's like a mix of like That's the Way It Is and On Tour. And he's just, you know, figuring out what the heck I'm going to do, you know, start using capes. Oh, it looks pretty cool when I open the cape in the end and people like faint like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, it's kind of like he's discovering his potential like of like the 70s, you know. So that's so why. Cool. And that show, just because it's the only one released till now, like in soundboard quality. So you can really hear everything.
Right.
Pretty, you know, okay. It's not like one of the best soundboards, but it sounds great. But yeah, that's definitely my favorite show. Like if I had to go back in time and watch any shows, it would be that November 71 tour for sure.
That's so cool, because 71 is, I think, a very underrated year.
Oh, super underrated. Like,
yeah.
Listen to his studio sessions. The Elvis Now album is incredible.
Oh my gosh. Guys, Elvis Right Now. If you didn't know, our podcast is named after that album because it is me and Maggie's combined favorite, because it rocks. It's so good.
It's incredible. It's just incredible. The song selection, the arrangements, his voice.
Yes.
Like, holy cow. It's such a good year. Such a good year. It's such a shame that, like, they didn't record much of that year. You know, it's kind of like you have in 1970, you have the That's the Way It Is on stage album and all that, mm-hmm. you know, big thing. And then you have that gap year in the middle. And then you have 72, like, On Tour, Madison Square Garden, you know, everything going on. And then 71 is just, like, floating in the middle, when that year was just incredible.
So, Ator, I want to know, what are some of your favorite songs to play? I know you do IGTV videos where you play for Instagram, and you also obviously play in concerts and in person. So what are kind of your favorite songs to perform?
So I love performing Polk Saladini, even though there's not, you know, there's not a lot of guitar work in it comparing to other Burton songs. But I just love playing Polk Saladini. For me, it's like the hype song of the night, you know. Since I was a little kid, you know, watching On Tour, and even That's the Way It Is, that was the song that I was like, oh, yeah, like Elvis is jamming with this. So,
yeah,
that's one of them. I also loved, even though we don't perform that one often, but I love when we do, I love performing And I Love You So. James's guitar on that is so good, so amazing. Like, his work is just impeccable. So being able to recreate that one, it's like, it's a tense song, because if I mess up, it's clearly loud and it sticks out like crazy. But in a good night, when we get everything going on okay, it's really like a nice vibe song. Like, I'm always vibing on that song. It's like, okay, aww, I like it. You know, I'm not looking at anything, song. You know, I'm looking like on the floor, kind of like, you know, looking at the pedals, kind of like mind is nowhere, you know, kind of just playing and feeling the chords. So that song, for me, it's like one of the best ones.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love that song. I think that song is super underrated as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's so many Elvis songs there. And underrated by Elvis, too. Like, some songs, when you hear it, you're like, why you didn't do this one live? Like,
look exactly
how freaking awesome you sound like. And he never wanted to try, you know, so.
Right. So Ator, who all have you met and played with? Like, who from Elvis's circle have you had the honor of meeting or maybe playing guitar with?
So meeting almost everybody. I mean, everybody from the TCB band, everybody from the Imperials, everybody, you know, from the Stamps Quartet, from every formation from the Stamps Quartet, because they change constantly. I mean, most of the musicians I met, exceptions are like, you know, people that passed away before I had the chance of performing, or passed away like in the 80s, 90s.
Sure.
Like, you know, J.D. Sumner, I didn't have the opportunity to meet him, which I wish I had, but, you know, he passed like 98, I think, or 97.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty Moore, I didn't have the opportunity to meet, and it was such a close call that it's like the biggest frustration of my life. So that people sucks. Like that, but like from the Mafia, I met, you know, George Klein, Larry Geller, Jerry Schilling, Joe Esposito. They're like sometimes the MC in the shows that we do, so we get to spend a lot of time with them. So everybody on that since I've met. Now performing, the biggest honor of my life was performing with DJ Fontana for like almost 6 years.
Wow.
That was like the highlight of my career ever. Like, you know, it's nothing will ever compare sharing the stage with that man and just, you know, hanging out with him. You know, we traveled together, we ate dinner together, we did everything together because we were on the road, we're traveling. So for me was like the highlight. I performed with the Sweets, with, you know, Joe Moscow from the Imperials. Everybody from the Stamps was already there. Man, so many people. It's kind of like hard to like name them. Sometimes I even like forget, and I'm like listening to a recording, and then I kind of remember, and it's like, oh yeah, I performed with that person. You know, just it comes out of the blue. Just everything just turns to a huge like mix in your head. Like it's so many, like so much emotion going on, and every time you perform with them, it's so surreal that it just seems like a dream. So you kind of got to sit down and be like, was this a dream, or did I actually play a gig with this person, you know?
I love that. Like,
thinking about this, or did it really happen? So that has happened a couple of times. But
that's funny.
But yeah, so many good people. And they're all incredible people. I mean, they're all incredible. It just makes you wonder how awesome was to be around Elvis, because it is like super awesome to hang out with these people, you know?
Right.
They're super nice people. I mean, Bill Bays from the Stamps, I mean, that's like one of the best like people I've ever met. He's just the sweetest, you know. Stell Brown from the Sweets. Stell is such a sweetheart. Donnie Sumner, super funny guy. You know, DJ was like the most simple human being ever. You know, he's like the first rock and roll drummer, and he's just the coolest, most like chilled person ever, you know.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's like experiences like that in life. Like I didn't take for granted it, like, and I never will, you know. It's been a huge honor.
That's amazing. And y'all, when I say Ator lives a pretty good dream life, this is what I mean. Like, you will always have a connection to Elvis in some way, because you've played with these people and you know these people that knew him. And like, to me, that's just the coolest thing ever, because getting to know or talk with anybody who was around Elvis is just so amazing.
Some things like that happens on the road that it's just like, it's so real. Like, I remember when we had show with Sean, and Sean wanted to do If You Talk in Your Sleep. And,
okay.
Stell, oh, it's such a jam.
I love it.
And Stell came for me, and she was like, okay, you're the guy that listens to the recordings all the time. And she goes, I haven't listened to this in like 40 years. So what the heck do I do on this?
And I was like,
what do you mean, what do you do on this? You recorded it. You sang with him live. And she was like, but I don't remember what I ate for lunch yesterday. She's like, you know, so do you have a recording with you? So it's that point that I literally grab my phone, go on YouTube. I can choose the show that I like, because they change constantly arrangements. And I can be like, okay, I want to hear she's singing this arrangement tonight because I like. So then I just pull up, like, you know, whatever live version I could find and that I remember that I liked. And I'm playing that audio for her, and she's listening to it. And I'm thinking, like, what the heck's going on in her head? Like, can she hear this and picture in her mind she's standing on stage with Elvis?
Right.
What Elvis was doing on this song? Is it being like flashbacks? What's going on in her mind, you know? And those moments for me are actually like more precious than being on stage in a certain way.
Yeah.
I'm just watching her memory working like right in front of me. And that was just like one of the most real moments of my life, just playing some recordings for her like that. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. Oh, now I remember. And then she just goes on stage and does exactly like they did, you know, the live version. And I'm just like watching all that unfold. And I'm just like, oh, my God, like what did I just witness? Like what happened?
That's insane. That is so cool. Wow.
And of course, you know, the occasional Elvis is playing everywhere. So there's been times that we're walking in the airport and like literally some CD store like in Cleveland had the Aloha playing. And we're literally walking in the airport with Stelle. And we just look and we're like, oh, hey, the Aloha is playing. And then it's like, oh, crap, like you were there. And we're now traveling to play Elvis music right now. That's why I say like it's a weird timeline. It's like an alternate universe thing that just blows my mind constantly. Like it's really a blessing like to know these people, really. Like, and if there's like any Elvis events in the future is that they are there, like anybody that's listening, like don't be embarrassed, you know, don't hold back questions. They love talking about Elvis. It was the best time of their lives, you know. So yeah. I don't guarantee that they're going to answer because I've asked a lot of questions that they literally just look at me and like left because it's like, how the heck am I going to remember that?
Right.
But I just, you know, ask them because you might pull a memory from them and, you know, that they haven't mentioned anywhere. And it just happened on that interaction with you. So as an Elvis fan, like be inquisitive, like really ask hard questions and try to make them remember things because they will. And they're going to share like really cool stories.
And I'm sure that makes them just as happy as it makes you as well, because remembering those times, I'm sure, means a lot to them.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, you know, every Elvis fan goes and asks them, like, oh, how was playing in the Aloha? Oh, what's your favorite show? And they have those, you know, ready answers. When they hear favorite show, they go, oh, Aloha or Madison Square Garden, because they know that that's what the fans are expecting. Mm-hmm. But if you dig a little bit more and you just go like, hey, do you remember that year, you know, that Elvis had a suit like this? What show did you like that suit? Like, did you think that Elvis looked good in it? You know, things that like are visual and will kind of trigger their memory visually.
Right.
They would just open and tell like everything. So that's like a better approach that I've had in a few years, because I'm not like really a big fan of asking, you know, common questions anyways. I always have some weird questions. Like I read things in books and I want to know if they're true, if they're involved, and or how was their perception of the situation, you know, because you have one view, but when something happened with Elvis, you had like 15 witnesses around, you know, so you want to know what, you know, each one saw, because we can't hear from Elvis. So we want to kind of, you know, make a little movie in our mind of like how it really happened, because we, you know, Elvis fans, we are kind of crazy about wanting to know exactly what happened and how did exactly Elvis look, what jacket was he wearing, did he give a smile on that time, did he find it funny,
right?
You know, it's we have all those, you know, weird questions that, you know, only Elvis fans will understand. But so yeah, like every time that, you know, there's opportunity to see them, meet them, they do a lot of panels during, you know, Elvis week and things like that. So that's something that I never wanted to spend money with. I always thought that the panels were expensive, mm-hmm. but I've lost so much and I realized that like the information that comes on those panels are so good, you know, just it's having the opportunity to hear them talking, it's totally worth it. Like if you're into Elvis' story, like that's the event that you gotta go.
Well, Ator, I have one more question for you before we wrap up today's episode. And that is, I get asked this a bunch and I want to know what you think. What do you think Elvis would have thought of Elvis tribute artists and just how relevant he still is, how many, you know, concerts are still being played with his music being featured? What do you think he would think about that?
So I have two like images in my head about that. Like, I think that the guys that, you know, we think that don't do a good job and we kind of see that they're kind of clowning around.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Elvis would get a kick out of it in like a funny way. And, you know, I think that his humor would kind of not cross off being, I don't know, of being something negative, but I think that he would find it pretty funny and amusing, and he would still, you know, he would still get it that it's like a tribute to him.
Right.
But I think that he would have fun with it. I really think that he wouldn't be like mad about it or anything. The good guys, the guys that are, you know, doing the research, that are really, you know, putting work into their performance, I think that he would be really happy and like honored somehow. You know,
sure. First,
I think he would be like really weirded out, like in the sense of like, oh my God, these guys are paying attention if like the stud on my suit fell on a show or another, and they're trying to recreate the same exact thing. So, but I still like in a positive way, not like weirded out, like in a negative way. I think honestly that he would be, I don't know, happy. You know, he had some interactions with ETAs during his lifetime.
Right.
I mean, you know, in Tahoe, he literally called this guy up on stage, and the guy sang Hound Dog on stage with Elvis. If he was against them, he wouldn't have done that.
Right, you know? Exactly.
So the guy in California that would show up at the gates all the time, he would go and talk to the guy and always, you know, give attention to him and always, you know, it's, I don't know, I feel like the guys that Elvis would, you know, in quotation marks, approve because... You know, the guys that Elvis, I think, would like in a sense of they're doing a great job. We kind of have that feel from being the guys that the original musicians are playing with and the guys that the original musicians are friends with. Mm-hmm. You know, if they approved this work, I'm sure that Elvis would have approved and be like, oh, cool. You know, it's their thing. You know, it's their thing. They
right.
do their thing. And I'm here. You know, I'm glad I inspired them or something like that. But
right.
Yeah, I really don't see it as negative, like people saying that Elvis would be pissed off about it and Elvis would be, I think that Elvis just wouldn't care. Like Elvis had so many other things to think about and, you know, so
yeah.
many questions of his own that I don't think that would be something that he would be really thinking much, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I think it's I think it would be something positive. I really think that Elvis would like them by, you know, having some stories of Elvis really literally being there with them. And yeah, I think it would be something super positive. And about his songs being here, I don't think that Elvis would believe that his songs are still being played the way that they are.
Right. I think,
you know,
I mean, he told so many people that he was afraid of being, you know, he thought he was going to be irrelevant, you know, when he died. He thought
he would just
people
be forgotten.
Were gonna, people were gonna forget him. And I wish I could just be like, look at it now. Like, so many people still love you. I bet he would be really happy about that.
Yeah, like, hey, we are releasing some recording that you did in like, you know, 1970. But hey,
right.
look at this, it's still selling like crazy, and people are getting nuts about it, and people are arguing about it over internet. Oh no, this is not take two, this is take three. Oh no, this is blah blah blah. Oh, you know, it's like
right.
that for me, it's more mind-blowing of him, you know, seeing how many people argue like on comments on Facebook about, oh no, that day, you know, the last day that he wore the cape, there was a huge argument some time ago about what was the last day that he performed with the cape. Probably the cape is heavy, you know, and like his back was hurting on that tour. He was just like, I'm going to wear today and not the next day.
Right.
And today it's like a whole day debate on Facebook. Oh, why did he stop wearing the cape? Why was this the last time?
Oh,
you know, so,
bye.
Yeah, it. I think that honestly, he would be amused with what's going on. Like, I think he would love that in a certain way. But at the same time, you know, he's just curious. It's like, he probably would be like, okay, stop crying here, and just give like a cape for every person and be like, okay, here.
Exactly. Here, have the house. Yeah. Exactly.
You know? Yeah, he's a cool dude. Like, he's a special, you know, performer. I don't think there's ever going to be someone, and there's never been someone like him. He's unique. He was literally like, he was a gift to humanity for sure.
You
know,
yes.
You have people that get close with like reach, and you know, you have like bands like, you know, the Beatles that, you know, brought a lot of happiness to people, but still, you know, it's Elvis is above all that. You know, he influenced them. He changed the business. He's the one that determined back, you know, back then that how music business would go. What's the next trendy thing? Even when you know, blank with the movies and things were going on, and we see the jokes from, you know, the Elvis and Nixon movie, how like the hippies wouldn't recognize here and anything.
Right.
But we know that that's like just like a kind of a comedy take of things. Like, you know, his relevant could be a little bit down for the pop culture, but in the long run, he was still the number one. And right after that, you know, the Aloha happened. Madison Square Garden happened, and he just conquered the world again.
Yeah. And so, that 68 special, like one concert, one little thing, and it put him right back up on top.
Right back. People were just, it erased from people's mind all the movies that they didn't like, or mm-hmm. it erased from Elsa's mind all the burden that he had. He was just like, I'll never go back to this, you know?
Right. I mean,
that 68 point in Elsa's career was just incredible. It was the best thing that could have happened in the world. I mean, we got another gift that Elvis gave to us. It's something that will never be forgotten, is that image of him with the black leather just right. rocking out, like, you know, so aggressive. You can hear his voice, 69, his voice so raspy, you know, and everything, because he's not like a controlled singer in 69, because he's so excited to be on stage. He's screaming. I mean, he's grabbing it with all that he can. He's enjoying that moment because he waited so many years for that moment. And now he's there, and the audience is just loving it. And he's going like a rocket. I mean, those audios are everything.
Yeah. Like we keep saying, you could tell that he loved that and that's where he wanted to be. And even like 8 years, if he was irrelevant at that time or whatever, 8 years later, and then he does a show and he's immediately number one again. Like, if he was irrelevant, I don't think he would have gotten the response that he would have gotten after one show in 68 if people just stopped caring about him after all those years.
And being the coolest dude around and being right. like, I'm not going to only steal number one and just, you know, skyrocket, but I'm going to do this with like a style that nobody has seen, with a class that nobody has seen. I'm right. going to just like rock the world, and just like in the 50s when, you know, he showed up, I'm going to be that different guy, and I'm going to just change the course of like music by just one TV special. It's amazing. It's amazing. His power is just incredible.
All right, Ator, thank you so very much for being a guest on our show. I'm really happy and honored that I got to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. And this was fun. Like, you know, it's COVID time. We don't have much socializing time. So this is like my socializing, like hanging out with friends.
Right. So, Elvis friends. I love it.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And when all this mess is over, I'm sure that we're all going to, you know, set up a day in Memphis, and we're all going to meet up and
oh, absolutely. Have some
good Marlowe's.
Yes, some ribs, some barbecue. It'll be a celebration for sure.
This was a free commercial, so Marlowe's, if you're listening to this,
sponsor. No,
sponsor. Yeah, sponsor this meeting. Give us a little coupon.
One more thing before you go, Ator. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you and your content?
Yes. So I'm really slow with technology. And I just started bringing things that I've been doing and things like that on YouTube and Instagram, because I was always slow with it. I kind of didn't do when tour was happening. So now that I had time, I went through my files and I'm just posting everything. So you can follow me on Instagram at Ator, H-E-I-T-O-R _TCB. Or on YouTube, I post a lot of weird stuff. So if you're into bootleg versions and, you know, B, C sides, D sides of songs that you want to know what James sounded like or what he did when he was playing, it's called the Ultimate Elvis Guitar Channel. And I try to avoid mainstream songs, so my content will always be the weird songs. So make sure that if you want to check that. Yeah, I always choose some like oddballs because it's, you know, it's still great songs that we might have forgotten or something. So
for sure,
to do that.
Right, those underrated ones are the gems.
Oh, completely, completely.
All right, guys, until we meet again, may God bless you.
Adios.